You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is time now for this, which we've been extremely excited about.
Now on Sports Day, full-on footy analysis with Champion Data's Daniel Hoyne.
And you can get involved, as we said. You've got a question about your club, you can do so. And we will do our best to put it to Hoyne. Jared.
Well, it's taken a hell of a lot of work. We've been in negotiations with his management for a long time because he is the smartest man in football. He dispels the myths and the truisms of the game. He corrects inaccuracies that people have taken for granted for years, and he does it with one simple thing. Mathematics and numbers. His name is Daniel Hoyne. He's in the chair. Hoyne, welcome.
That's a fair introduction there, Jared. Thank you for having me, and thank you for having me, Kane.
It's great to have you on board. I've been a great fan of Champion Data since it was initiated many, many, many years ago when it was not very popular, but it certainly had a big impact on the way people analyse the game, the way commentators understand the game, and certainly the way clubs run their programs.
Yeah, no, correct. And, yeah, we just... Yeah, we see ourselves as a piece of the puzzle, if you like, and that puzzle is quite significant, and there are a lot of pieces that go into it, and we just consider ourselves a small piece in the overall jigsaw, and to be able to tell the story of the game in a slightly different lens, is what we consider our strength, if you like, and some people believe it more than others, and that's fine, I understand that as well, but hopefully we're just here to be able to tell a different story to potentially what's already been told.
Well, I've been a convert for probably the longest of anybody in the media. I remember questioning it when it first came out, and I went out and had lunch with Luffy. And he explained it, and it's just enhanced the way that you see football. It's not for everybody, but we hope we help you understand your game better and maybe dispel some inaccuracies. But as Luffy used to say, without data, you're just a flog with an opinion. So I'm just interested in what you've got to say from the data. And why don't we just start, Hoyne, with some observations, general observations that round one threw up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall common theme for round one is forward footy. So not necessarily fast footy, but definitely forward footy. And what we're sort of alluding to when it's just coming with that is just getting the ball forward, getting it inside 50 as much as you possibly can. And how you can do that, can obviously come through various ways, whether that be, going forward by foot or going forward by hand. So we saw in round one, close to 55 inside 50s on average per team, which, if you extrapolate that out across the season, if it goes that way, that'll be the second most we've ever seen since 99, since Champion Data came into existence. We believe at Champion Data that the world didn't exist pre-99, so right. We don't worry
most
about...
Most people love that belief.
Yeah, so we don't worry about anything pre-99. So, and then we saw on the weekend as well, we saw nine teams... gain over 250 metres by hand. So to put that into context, last year there were only three teams that gained over 250 metres by hand. And those three teams were actually really appealing to watch. You're only looking at Richmond, Collingwood and Geelong in 2022. And I think we can all agree that they were actually really good to watch, those three teams in 2022. So far, only one game in, but we've seen half the competition jump on board that forward handball footy.
Who's the outlier the other way?
So you're looking at West Coast, who are going that way, and Carlton tend to actually operate, despite a high handball game, they try and operate hands to go backwards to release someone to go forward. So they do it slightly different. So you've been big on this, Jared, and I know Kane, you've been big on it, as well. But the Sharon has been set free, if you like. You've
I
been
like
asking
it.
For it for about 10 years, and so far one game worth of data, so we don't want to jump out too far, but it does look like the Sharon might have been set free.
So just a question on that with the Blues, because I'm going, look, the big advantage is their forward line. They got the two, what I think by the end of the season could be the Hawkins and Cameron of last year, and so it could be Mackay and Curnow this year, and they're playing against a depleted key position Richmond defence. Why would they move the ball slow? Because on the night, it just looked as though they didn't give those guys a chance.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So from stoppage, they try and they try and release hands to then get, you know, either a Sam Doherty or usually a Sam Walsh, if he's playing, to release and get free and to actually try and generate a quality entry. Whereas some other teams are just happy just to just win that stoppage and actually just get the ball forward just to start with. So you'll see Melbourne do that.
Get
you'll
territory.
See, yeah, so you'll just see them just try and get the ball forward and then we'll find a way to score through that. Whereas Carlton tend to opt, you know, to use, you know, whether it be Cripps or Hewitt or Kennedy, those big, strong inside midfielders who, you know, who probably aren't the best ball users going around, get you to win the contest to then to relieve, you know, a Sam Walsh or a Sam Doherty or, you know, whoever it might be off the halfback flank, Adam Sard even as well, to then release going forward. So it's a different strategy, and it's one that I think, you know, everyone should probably keep an eye on to actually see if it's working or not.
What else did round one throw up? Anything to do with scores?
Yeah, so we saw, probably the best part of 15 years, we've seen, you know, it being a forward half game. And what we mean by that is that, you know, majority of your scoring is either generated from winning a stoppage in your forward your forward half or winning the ball back off your opposition in the forward half of the ground. And it's been, you know, a quite significant, you know, differential between back half scoring and forward half scoring. Round one, again, nine games in, but round one we've seen, you know, an even split between forward half and defensive half scoring. So we, you know, so we saw 43% of scores in round one getting generated from the defensive half.
This going back to the 80s.
If that continues, that's the highest percentage we would have seen in close to 15 years.
Yeah.
And 15 years ago is when we were seeing scores of around about 95 to 100 per team per game.
The loss of generating scores from the back line correlated with the loss of the 100 goal kicker. Are you saying that we are moving in the trend of the 100 goal kicker?
I'm not saying that. I think you're saying that.
I am hoping that. I'm not saying it.
Yeah, I'm hoping that. I think we can all agree that we can hope to see 100 goal kicker again, whether or not it happens or not.
Well, it won't happen, but somebody might get 70.
Yeah, but I think that we can all agree, and yeah, I'm not sure what you think, Kane, but ball movement is key. If that results in 100 points per game, then yeah. A bonus, but if the ball's moving constantly up and down the ground at pace, which is what we saw in round one, it just looks so much better and so much more appealing on the eye.
My recollections of previous years is the season often starts this way. We're in essentially summer, ball's dry, conditions are good. That movement and the speed of movement and the defensive transition and the forwards looking to kick 70 goals drops off as we get into the winter months. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, that's a fair call. So that's, so we saw last year round one ball movement, had definitely improved off the first nine games. But it hadn't been at the numbers that we've seen in the first nine games in 2023. So that's gone to a whole nother level again. So so hopefully, you know, you will, in all likelihood, we will see the numbers slowly come back a little bit. But from what we've seen in round one, we haven't seen this in round one for years.
And can I just throw up a query on the dry weather? I mean, it was really wet at the MCG on Thursday night and Friday. It was slippery and it was tough to handle the ball. I know it didn't rain, but whatever it was, overwatered or dew, and also up in the Gold Coast. So that will be interesting. It made it even a better figure, I think, rather than what you are saying. Okay, so they're the general observations. We'll take a couple of calls very shortly, but let's move on to the questions that the first round threw up, Hoiny.
Yeah, so I just want to start with Collingwood, and you know, I think everyone's been sort of in love with how they're playing offensively and you know, what isn't there to like with how they're moving the ball and how they scored on the weekend in particular. But something that I just wanted to give them credit for was how they defended Geelong. So despite Geelong scoring 103 points and they were extremely accurate in front of goal, they only allowed Geelong to get involved in 6 one-on-one contests for the night. So Geelong for the last 5 or 6 years have been the best one-on-one team in the competition. Right. So you think of Hawkins, his one-on-one record is through the roof. Dangerfield, these guys, they excel in one-on-one contests. Collingwood did not allow that to happen. So 6 one-on-one contests that Geelong were involved in. That's their fewest in 12 years.
It's amazing. That's with and without Howe.
Yeah. Yep. So that's a... Cam.
What does that say about modern defending? Because you grow up, your back shoulder, you've got an opponent. Can you win it if you are a back shoulder one-on-one defending back six?
I think you'll have to buck the trend that's happening at the moment. So you see the way.
Who
that
are some teams that who are some teams that prefer more to play one on one? I think Jared touched on this last night.
So it's a little bit of Brisbane at the moment. They prefer to play one on one, which is a bit of a concern. The Dogs at times have done that as well. But you've seen for years. So if you have a look at what Richmond did over their 4-year period, you have a look at what Melbourne did, you have a look at what Geelong did, now you have a look at what Collingwood did. They're all aggressive in terms of how they defend. And quite often you can see these teams exposed in their defensive 50 where they're actually outnumbered, but they'll back themselves to then get back and to be able to help out and chop out and help out their mates in their back half. I mean, how often do you see on Friday night Darcy Moore or Nathan Murphy or these guys just charge off and just, without a worry or a fear of their direct opponent to be able to help out and actually get the ball back off the opposition? So I think if you're not doing it, I think you're actually running a pretty risky game.
Okay, that's number one. What else?
So I heard Kane last night, heard you talking about Eric Hipwood. It pricked my ears a little bit, and we've sort of had conversations internally about Eric Hipwood for a little while, and without potting Eric too much here, but the last 7 years of any player to play 100 games, he's the lowest rated player in the competition.
Is that right?
For the last 7 years,
the Brisbane gave him a 7-year contract.
Yeah, that's what that's
you are feeding a wild beast now. Oh, that's extraordinary.
Do Brisbane not have champion data numbers?
No, they do. They do. Absolutely, they do. So my question is around Eric is that clearly right now Brisbane, and for the last 18 games that Brisbane have played, they've got defensive issues. They haven't got the interceptor behind the ball. Harris Andrews has to play on the number one key defender. Key forward each week. Mm. We have seen time and time and time again the failed forward go back. We saw, even Asava Radigalia on the weekend look terrific behind the ball. I think it's worth a discussion around Hipwood getting thrown behind the ball. And the reason why is, as a kid playing under 18 championships, he averaged 8 intercepts a game and almost 3.5 intercept marks a game. They are, at AFL level, they are elite numbers. But we haven't seen him play behind the ball at all throughout his 118 game career. And I think the time's come to have a potential discussion around this twofold, to get Eric going, but to also get your defensive system going, because you need that interceptor behind the ball that we talk about. Melbourne and Geelong and Collingwood as probably the three best teams in it at the moment, they all have that player behind the ball.
That's the first bit of gold, I reckon, from Hoiny, Kane, to throw up kids under 18 stats and re-energise Brisbane's defence, which is clearly a problem. How are you going to sort out their forward line, though? Because right now there's no McStay and there's no Hipwood if you put him as an intercepting defender.
Well, I think for Brisbane, their strength last year was their ability to be able to move the ball, and offensively was their strength.
Yep.
So they'll find ways to score. You'll always find ways to score if your defensive system is intact.
That's what St Kilda said on the weekend.
But if it's not intact, well, forget about it. It'll win your games because you're so offensively strong. But if you can't defend towards the end of the year, as I said, forget about success.
Strong point. Moving on to point number three. How many we got, by the way?
However many you two would like.
Okay, just roll them through.
So talking about Melbourne. So obviously Melbourne are flying at the moment and cherry ripe for this year. But I think last year they became probably a little bit too predictable with their ball movement. So no team in the competition went long down the line just to a basic contest down the line more often than what Melbourne did.
So your average Melbourne supporter has been telling me over the last 12 months that their forward line is the problem.
So their connection going inside 50 last year, in terms of what it was in the first half of the year to the second half of the year, didn't actually change too much. They were scoring 44% of the time they went in. First half of the year, they were scoring 43% of the time in the second half of the year.
Mm. So what were they doing in 21?
So a real no change, about the same, about that 43-44%. So nothing had really changed in there. But their ball movement in the first half of 2022 was clearly number one in the competition. But teams worked out what their method was. It was a simple method, long down the line. We'll get numbers over there. They're pretty predictable. They're not going to try and switch the footy and what have you. But what we saw on the weekend against the Dogs was a bit of a change-up. Was a little bit of still opting to go long down the line, but nowhere near as heavily as what they were in the second half of the year. And as a result, their ball movement on the weekend, to be able to score 50 points going from one end of the ground to the other, was absolutely extraordinary. So a good little change up there to Simon Goodwin.
Daniel Horn is with us from Champion Data, live in the studio. He's going to stick around for a little bit. We're seeing your text come through on the Timber text. We'll put that to Horny just prior to our next break, so he's got some time to have the answers ready to your questions. So to hear you say that Melbourne scored 50 points from defensive 50 is terrific. And everything you said about Melbourne, you would like. But their opposition was the Western Bulldogs, who have defended poorly for a long, long time. And I keep reading your numbers about how poor they were on defending transition. I reckon it was 15th in the competition last year. They've had a full preseason to work on it, Hoiny, and they get smacked and scored against again. They've got some serious questions to answer.
I think I was having to think about this over the off-season, Kane, and you know, I'm not saying that these guys are your match winners or not, but they're so important. And I'm talking about those small half-forward flankers that are able to run and run and run and get up and back and down the ground.
The Richmond built three flags.
Jared's big on this.
So you think of Richmond, so you think of Butler, Castagna, Rioli, Lambert. You think of Melbourne when they win the flag and they've got Spargo and Sparrow and Neil Bullen. You think of Geelong last year and they've got Myers and they've got Stengel and they've got Close and they've got Isaac Smith playing that role. If you look at the Dogs, to me, and this might be harsh, but look at the Dogs, you go, who are they?
Mm.
Who are there two or three or four that are able to help both transition the ball offensively and defensively? And I think if you haven't got them, it's putting so much pressure on your back six to be able to hold up, with some serious speed of ball coming their way. So I think until they find these two or three players that are able to actually do that, and I'm not too sure who they are. I haven't got the GPS data with me, but they've got to be able to find them. And if they don't, well, you know, we're going to be having these conversations, I think, throughout the year again, Kane, that, you know, here they are defensively.
Yeah, so the talk is that it was the key position stuff. And, okay, they've solved that problem in the off-season. Finally, Luke Beveridge has got those key position players that he hasn't had. And we actually had a question when Arthur Jones was ruled out with injury. Someone rang up, Jared and I, and said, who's going to be the Western Bulldogs small forwards this week? And we thought, okay, well, not sure. We had a couple of Riley West suggestions, and Oscar Baker comes in perhaps for that role.
Yep.
I don't know. McLean,
he's on the wing on the weekend for memory.
Yeah. So I think it's a good point that you make. Whilst we focus on those big key position players, perhaps they've neglected that. So, what does it say about their off-season, though, if Luke Beveridge hasn't been able to design a defensive system that's going to stack up to match the talent that he's got on his list?
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation. And to another extent, you can have the same conversation about Brisbane.
All right.
Mm. So I know it's easy now, but we're only one game in, but we're having the same conversation about Brisbane over the off-season. It was like, okay, everyone's really happy with what they've done with Dunkley and Gunston and McKenna and these guys that have come in and Ashcroft and what have you. That helps them offensively. That wasn't their issue last year, offensively.
Mm.
Who are there two or three small forwards that are able to run up and back down the ground? Charlie Cameron's not. Lincoln McCarthy can't do it. Cam Rayner couldn't do it. So just, yeah, you've got to be able to find them.
Hoiny is with us for Champion Data. If you want to ask a question, you can do so. I've got a few coming through, which we will get him to peruse over in the ad break. From the MRO, they are now deliberating. The AFL Tribunal, Shane McAdam, was sent straight there. So as soon as that verdict comes to hand, we will give that to you. We're here for the award-winning 7-seat Kia Sorento and for Maccas. Make your AFL pre-game routine count with Maccas. More coming up with our man Daniel Hoyne from Champion Data right after this. You're with Sports Day. Kane Corns, Daniel Hoyne and Jared Healy with you.
Pick up 40 Chicken McNuggets and Tangy Cajun Sauce at Macca's drive-thru today. The award-winning 7-seat Kia Sorento, Kia's large SUV, available now at your nearest Kia dealer. You're listening to Sports Day.
Yes, indeed you are, and Daniel Hoyne is with us from Champion Data. We've got a segment coming up, Kane. I know you'll be really keen on it. It's called Who Did They Miss the Coaches in Their Coaches' Votes, or otherwise known as Where the Coaches Got It Wrong. So we'll get to that very shortly, and we'll get to your texts and whip through those. But a couple of observations before we go. I know you've got one on Carlton, their forward line, and Dusty and his impact.
Yeah, so I think for Carlton, it's just an interesting conversation to have. I mean, everyone talks about how dangerous they are with Curnow and Mackay, and probably fair enough. But the reality is, since the bye last year, they're only averaging 76 points per game since the bye last year, and that's 13th in the competition. And we talk about, you know, the turnover game being king, your ability to be able to score off the back of turnover. Well, they've scored the fifth fewest points in that time, and we're talking, you know, roughly about, you know, 12 games worth of sample size there. So
what has to change for them to increase their turnover?
So, So they've got to be able, so their ability to be able to move the ball from one end of the ground to the other, which is what you alluded to before, Kane, was nowhere near at the level of what Richmond was on the weekend. And obviously Richmond had the more of the forward ball movement method that they want to introduce. So it's potentially looking at changing their method going forward and actually trying to adopt what Geelong did last year by giving Hawkins and Cameron a chance by going long and just getting it in there and just letting them go to work rather than sitting back and waiting for the actual perfect entry. Just let them go and let them fight for it.
Their opposition was Richmond. Explain to me, Horny, how Richmond can have 66 inside 50s with a forward line that looks like Lynch, Revolt, Rioli, Martin, Bolton, and kick 8 goals.
I think, well, two reasons. One, their ball use going inside 50 was horrific. Other than Dusty on the weekend, it was poor. And the other thing, too, they were still able to generate 25 shots at goal. For only 8 goals. Mm. So their return should have been roughly about the 80 to 85 mark, which is still, which is still below average for a 65 inside 50 game. But I think, as Damien Hardwick said, I think everything else that they did Richmond looked like a Richmond game, just that connection and that ball use going inside 50 was horrific.
And one final one on Dusty before we just whip through a few texts.
I think we've just got to keep an eye on this guy because we're just so used to his high expectation as that midfield forward type of player. But just putting it into context, if he plays at that standard and the game that he rated on the weekend, he will be All-Australian and he will be the number one rated general forward in the competition. His game on the weekend, have 23 disposals, playing 100% game time for 10 contested possessions. He does that for the rest of the year, he will be All-Australian and he will be the number one rated general forward in the comp.
Texts are coming through thick and fast. Let's get to a few of those. Daniel, statistically, was there any significant change for North Melbourne under Alistair Clarkson in round one?
Yeah, so one significant change to look out for if you're a North supporter. So last year under David Noble, they were extremely aggressive in terms of their ball movement coming out of their defensive 50. They were, they wanted to go corridor, they wanted to challenge corridor, but the reality was they didn't have the skill set behind them to be able to adopt that method, and quite often the ball would just go back over their heads for a goal. On the weekend, their boundary use went from 41% under David Noble to 65% under Alistair Clarkson. So just just be prepared that Clarko's going to want to be able to protect this back group and give them a chance to defend more often than what they did last year.
Who had the highest defensive rating as a team for round one? Do you have that information?
So St Kilda would be that team. To give up 65 inside 50s is a huge number, but to only give up 52 points from that. So only 26% of the time Freo went in, did they score? AFL average is around about that 43, 44% mark. So one thing that Ross does have to work with is, despite these injuries, in the first half of last year, they were a really strong defensive team, St Kilda. They haven't lost anyone behind the ball so far this year. So he has that personnel to be able to work with, to be able to implement what he's trying to implement.
So Western Bulldogs fan wants to know about their ball use. I did note this on the night that Bontempelli, uncharacteristically poor by foot. I think McRae was poor. And as a whole, Treloar's the same. He's often a bit erratic by foot. But their kick efficiency, the Bulldogs, how was it and how much did that hurt them?
It was poorer than what we've seen for the last couple of years. And to add to that, Kane, as well, you're looking at Caleb Daniel and Bailey Dale as well in that group. I mean, they're two of the most beautiful kicks in the competition, the most dangerous kicks in the competition. And at times on Saturday night, they had a poor return in regards to that area. But that's not a trend for them. It will, it's just something for us to just keep an eye on over the next couple of weeks.
Reuben Gibney had 12 tackles. This is a positive for the West Coast. They're hard to find at the moment. He had 12 tackles on debut. Is that the most for a debutant?
I think it is up there without knowing. I think there was another couple of players that had a 13 and a 14 tackle game on debut. But to have 12, I think, puts him in the top 10 that we've seen since 99, that is.
Have Essendon finally found a big-bodied midfielder?
Yeah, so Setterfield's an interesting addition here. So, I mean, despite him not winning contest and clearance on the weekend, his ability to be able to get involved on the outside was significant. Yeah, that was his highest rated game of his career, Setterfield. So his ability to be able to get out on the outside, but to then to be able to give them another rotation in that midfield group, is significant and is something that it's going to be interesting to see how they use Parrish, Merritt and Scheel moving forward. So yeah, so we could be talking about that, Kane and Jared, in a in a couple of weeks' time, has been a really smart trade acquisition.
What was interesting about North Melbourne is they went in with Cherry. He ended up with a syndesmosis. He's out for a fair period of time, and they replaced him with a makeshift ruckman. And yet I look at the centre bounce clearances, 7-8 in favour of West Coast, so only a win by one. And around the ground clearances, 26-13 in favour of North Melbourne.
I think this just gets back to getting a ruckman, and you know, whilst it wasn't a ruckman in Hugh Greenwood, but just getting someone to compete in the ruck, and just I think just giving your midfield group a chance to be able to compete at ground level. And if you're North Melbourne and you're looking at Simpkin and LDU in particular, they've probably got the upper hand on the West Coast midfielder. So just to be able to compete with two competitors in Comden and Greenwood, just allowed them to be able to get the ball to ground level, 50-50 contests, to be able to to go to work and actually get those strong returns from a clearance perspective.
Who was the highest rated player individually for round one, if you've got those numbers?
So Max Gawn, number one rated player in the competition I think that was his third highest game of his career.
Ever.
On the weekend. So, I mean, he has some absolutely massive games, and we saw a couple of them last year, and that was one of them to start the year.
He's a hell of a player, and he's started the year incredibly well. His game against Richmond in the practice game was phenomenal, and he's backed up. And as I said last night, Kane, he may break the hold of the midfield forwards on the Brownlow.
Now I know that we'll be fascinated by the Brownlow votes in round one to see if he gets recognition. Before I let Jared loose on who did they miss, just one for you, Horny. We need a thick skin in this game. We get a lot of feedback, and you got to cop it. Where was the individual ratings from Champion Data this preseason? I was waiting by the news outlets all preseason, and I was going to unload with a big editorial out of 6 o'clock, and they never came. You're not getting soft on us, are you? Come on.
Well, now we're friends, Kane. We're going to actually, we'll probably get to work and actually get ready to to release them to you at the end of the year, and all feedback is
where were they?
Is good, but no, we didn't. To be honest, we actually didn't have the time this year to actually do them. So hopefully, we're looking at reintroducing them, because they are, despite getting some criticism, they do generate some pretty significant content.
It's great content.
I'm with you. So hopefully, we're having that chat in 6 months' time.
But I always find it interesting because people back their eye in, and yet the eye has lied for a long, long time. I'm not sure the data lies. What does the data say about comparing Ginnivan to Bobby Hill on one game?
So, only on one game, but I think the forward half pressure that Hill is able to provide, could be a greater asset than what Ginnivan is able to provide. They're both pretty efficient around goal. Ginnivan, more often than not, is quite accurate in front of goal, and Hill on the weekend kicked 3 goals straight. So they're not going to be huge ball winners, and they're probably going to take their chances in front of goal. But if you're looking at probably what is a separating factor at the moment, what Hill was able to do from a pressure sense against Geelong on the weekend was elite. So that's probably the one difference.
Still to come, Kane, Hoiney's gems and Hoiney's horror to finish up with. But let's go to where the coach has stuffed it up.
All right, so they've given us their coaches' votes. I'm going to go a little bit lighter. Who did they miss?
Okay.
That's what we're going to go with. They do pay my wage in the end.
Okay,
interest,
I like it.
So we're going to start with there's five players that we're just having a look at, comparing the coaches' votes on the weekend to the ratings that came about. So Tom Mitchell didn't get a coach's vote in his game against Geelong on the weekend. And we had him as the second highest rated player on the ground. Despite only finishing with 21 disposals, it was all high impact, which I don't think we've said about Tom Mitchell for quite a while. So 21 disposals, 14 contested, 10 clearances, 2 goals. So that was his ninth highest rated game of his career. And he's played a lot of footy. And to put that into context, Kane, as well, his 8 highest rated games above that, he had 32 disposals plus in all of them. So to only have 21, and we talked about Taylor Adams and Craig McRae mentioning it in the offseason that we're going to see a different Tom Mitchell. Mm-hmm. I think one game up, we've already seen a more high-impact Tom Mitchell.
Do you think people underrated his potential impact?
I think, yeah, no, yeah. I think, and I think I can understand why. Only looking at 21 disposals, yeah, you can probably understand
okay,
why.
Okay, moving on. Where else the coaches stuff up?
So Liam Ryan, no doubt, I think, changed the game for West Coast in that third quarter. He was the third highest rated player on the ground. His last 45 minutes when they came back from almost six goals down, eight disposals, six of them led to scores, three goals on the scoreboard. Junior Rioli, Kane, I'm not too sure what you thought of his game.
Yeah, I gave him votes.
Yeah, so we had him as the highest rated player on the ground.
BOG.
Yeah, so again, our rating system is looking at impact, not volume necessarily, looking at impact on matches. So 16.
It also, just to put it into context, it penalises mistakes.
Yeah, it penalises poor ball use as well. So, yeah, so Junior Rioli, number one rated player on the ground, despite 16 disposals, well, only 16 disposals, 14 of them were won in the forward half of the ground. So he wins it in dangerous positions, eight score involvements, three goals. The one that I just wanted to raise is Ed Richards. Mm. So, yes, they lost by 50 points, but his game was only second to Max Gawn on the weekend. So he had 16 intercept possessions. That's the most ever by a Bulldogs player. He won 13 intercept possessions at ground level. So he probably got missed because he's not winning that clean intercept mark.
Cody Waitman said he'd be all Australian.
Yeah, so he won 13 of them at ground level. To put that into context, that's the equal most ever by any player that we've recorded.
Gee. So I think Goody and Luke had an off night with the coaches' votes because you told us Gawn had his third highest score ever and he just got the five coaches' votes as well. And Ed Richards, you can sort of understand because, you know, it was dominated by Melbourne players with the dominance of the game, but that's a big score. Well, you got a final one?
Yeah, the last one for me was Mason Wood in the St Kilda game. So, you know, I think you got the one coach's vote. We had him as the highest rated player for St Kilda. Low scoring game, seven score involvements he was involved in, two goals. So high impact again from Mason Wood.
You got any gems? We're running out of time. We've got to go 3 minutes and you've got your horror to finish with. But have you got a couple of gems just to leave us with?
Yeah, so talking about Lewis... Lewis Young. So since the bye last year, AFL number two for intercept possessions. Only Sam Taylor is ahead of him. And we know that Sam Taylor was an All-Australian last year. So something to keep an eye out for him.
The number two in the competition.
Yeah, that's, number two in the competition.
That's strong, isn't it?
Yeah. So he's no longer a – well, he shouldn't be a surprise to anyone as well. And the horror to finish, I know that we're running out of time, is just West Coast.
West Coast, yeah.
It's just West Coast. So just
– don't get Kane started.
So the West Coast ball movement has been – horrific since they won the flag in 18. They had a point of difference in 18 that, you know, that probably surprised the competition. Mm. It hasn't really changed since. It was the worst ball movement season on record in 2022 last year. And to start...
And just to clarify for our listeners who will get to understand this lingo a bit more, when you say ball movement, what are we talking about?
That's just going from one end of the ground to the other. Okay. So your ability to go from your defensive 50 to inside 50. It was the worst season we've seen in that aspect on record in 2022. And the way that it started against North Melbourne, who last year, yes, they have changed coach, but last year they were the easiest team in the competition to move the ball against from one end of the ground to the other, was again... poor. And we talk about, you know, Kane, at the start of the show that we saw, you know, the Sharon set free and the ability to be able to move the ball one end of the ground to the other being at, you know, sort of ridiculous levels. They again struggled to be able to move the ball from one end of the ground to the other. So something's got to give at West Coast to be able to keep up with what's happening across the competition.
And can you just leave me with something on Freo's ball movement, the super slow-mo Freo?
Slow-mo Freo, you're big on this, aren't you? Yeah, so... again, you know, 135 marks, 136 marks, whatever they took last year, they relied on the control game. If they didn't take 95 marks or more last year, they were only going at a win rate of about 30%.
Yep.
So they rely on it. They rely on the control game. But as we've seen for the last four, five, 6 years, the control game doesn't work. It's not sustainable. So something's going to have to shift there for Fremantle. Otherwise, we're going to be having the same conversation more weeks than not.
Hoyne, give me the right ratio for Fife. Forward and midfield. What's the mix?
I'll be having 70% mid and 30% forward.
There's a statement to finish because I reckon it was about 98% forward and 2%.
And he was only targeted, and sorry, on that Kane, he was only targeted three times from 65 entries.
Anything on the Suns and the Swans?
Ah, just how poor the Suns were in most aspects, and the Swans played a Swans game that they played for the majority of 2022 season last year.
They need to react.
Pressure, good ball movement. Yeah,
we're gonna have a lot of fun this year. Hey mate, we appreciate you stopping by the studio to talk some footy with us and get in depth, which I know we appreciate, as does our audience. It's going to be a must listen to segment, hopefully throughout the year. So we'll do it all again next week. Enjoy the footy on the weekend.
No, thanks guys. Pleasure.
Champion Data's Daniel Hoyne joining us. If